produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. U.S. Supreme Court agrees to hear Bong Hits for Jesus case. The Supreme Court agreed on Friday to hear a free speech case from Alaska, known as the Bong Hits for Jesus dispute, in which a high school principal suspended a student for displaying that phrase on a banner. The case, which focuses on the extent free speech rights are afforded to students, drew media interest after former Whitewater prosecutor Kenneth Starr began representing the school district in August. On behalf of the Juneau School District, Starr petitioned the Supreme Court to take up the case after the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the student, saying the school violated his First Amendment rights. The case has highlighted a legal gray area separating students' free speech rights and school officials' authority to enforce anti-drug policies. The case began in 2002 after Joseph Frederick, then a senior at Alaska's Juneau Douglas High School, displayed a banner proclaiming, quote, "Bong Hits for Jesus," close quote, while standing on a sidewalk across the street from the school as the Winter Olympics torch was passing through Juneau. Then-principal Deborah Morse confiscated the banner and suspended Frederick from school for 10 days. The event took place during school hours, but the school had let students out of class to watch the torch event. The school district argued that the student was promoting marijuana use. Frederick said he wrote the nonsensical phrase because he thought it was funny and it would get him on television. Because the demonstration occurred outside the classroom and did not disrupt school activity, the school had violated the student's free speech rights by punishing him, the appeals court found. In the court opinion, Judge Andrew Kleinfeld wrote that, quote, "Public schools are instrumentalities of government, and government is not entitled to suppress speech that undermines whatever missions it defines for itself," close quote. The school district saying the issue was whether students should be allowed to promote illegal drug use in an educational setting, retained Starr to help them take the case to the high court. Starr became a national figure in the 1990s while investigating then-President Bill Clinton's involvement with the Whitewater real estate deal and the Monica Lewinsky scandal. He and his law firm, Kirkland & Ellis, have taken the case on behalf of the Juneau School District pro bono. A growing trend in public schools is to drug test larger swaths of the student population without suspicion, further negating the basic freedoms and constitutional protections enjoyed by American adults and students in private schools. Students wearing t-shirts, buttons, or stickers relating to marijuana are often the target of their school administrators on and off campus. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. We have a very special show for you today. It's our 6th month anniversary right here on the Audio Stash. We premiered this podcast on June the 5th, 2006, And there has been a spectacular response since. Over 750,000 downloads of this program in the last 6 months. That's right, folks. Over 750,000 downloads. And I want to give a special thank you to everyone who has downloaded this program on iTunes, your computers, your cell phones, however you get the show. Thank you for listening and making us one of the top ranked government and organization podcasts on iTunes. We're ranking number 9 today in our iTunes category. That means we're beating out folks like Senator Hillary Clinton, the U.S. Navy, the Pentagon, and often give the White House official podcasts a run for their money as well. Normal News and Normal's Daily Audio Stash are the most popular prohibition reform podcasts out there. And you, our listeners, are the real reason for that success. So thank you. Thank you for listening to the show every single day. I also want to say a couple of special thank yous today. First, a huge thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media. Red Aphid are the designers and maintainers of the Normal.org website. It is a monster job that they do incredibly well. And Red Aphid are the ones who make sure the technical side of our podcast works so flawlessly. So a big thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media. Also, the biggest reasons our content is so very good every day is due largely to the work of Normal's Executive Director, Alan St. Pierre, and Normal's Senior Policy Analyst, Paul Armentano. I work with Paul every weekday to write the daily news and provide our audience with the most up-to-date marijuana information. Paul is one of Normal's greatest human assets. His ability to research topics across categories of medicine, science, legal issues, and legislative reform is a rare talent, coupled with stellar and professional writing. Paul is a frequent guest here on the program, and without his input, this program could never offer such wonderful daily content. So, a huge thanks to you, Paul. Also, Alan St. Pierre, Normal's executive director, is the executive producer of this program. The idea for a daily podcast was Alan's, and his work to include Normal's advisory board members, book celebrity guests, make his own reports and essays here for the program, and get our podcast access to important events have really shaped the core of this program. And I'm not just butt-kissing when I say this, but Alan is really the biggest reason for our success. So great thanks go to Alan for his work and support of Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Folks, we have brought you the most important voices of marijuana law reform, and as we go forward to continue providing the best audio content for American cannabis consumers working to end prohibition, let's take a moment to listen in to a few past highlights. One of my favorites come from the Normal 2006 conference. Attending and recording the conference last April in San Francisco made me realize how important it is for Normal speakers and the activists involved with reform to be heard by the general public. We'll start with a Voices of Reform Normal News special featuring Judge William Murphy Jr. He was by far my favorite speaker at the Normal 2006 conference. Hearing him that day in April was a turning point for my own activism. After Billy, we'll hear from the star speaker at the Normal Conference, Tommy Chong. This is Voices of Reform, a Normal News special from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Each week, we'll be presenting special podcasts with portions of audio recorded at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. The complete speeches and more Normal audio is available at norml.org/podcast. This week, we'll hear from one of the nation's top lawyers, Judge William Murphy. Mr. Murphy's understanding of race and the drug war is personal and direct. His passion and eloquence make him one of the most important voices advocating an end to the drug war. This talk does contain explicit content.
And I've dedicated my remaining years to the battle against drug prohibition, a battle which has become so racist, so counterproductive, so destructive, so awful in terms of what is happening to this country and to its core values, that to me it is the most important fight that can be waged today. And I'm not a naive guy. I've been involved in lots of courtroom activity. I know lots of cops, represented cops, got cops in my family. I've had relatives of all stripes wrongfully arrested. I've been repeatedly rousted illegally. My son, who is a lawyer, has been interdicted upwards of 14, 15 times, just driving while black. And I understand what's going on, but it never ceases to amaze me. And I think I finally figured it out at the ripe old age today of 63. Why there's not even a debate about prohibition in America. First of all, if you look back at the last prohibition, it was a constant debate. The debate was narrowly lost with the Constitutional Amendment. As soon as the Constitutional Amendment passed, the debate quickened. The debate quickened every year after that. Americans were so divided about it because it criminalized the majority of the American population, as does current prohibition. That debate gathered momentum. Voices from all parts of the country could be heard in and out of the law enforcement community. It was essentially an all-white debate because back in those days, black people didn't count for much anything. Let's be clear. Black people were not part of the organization of the movement for prohibition. Black people were not counted as the victims of alcohol abuse. Black people were not counted among the criminalized for alcohol abuse. This was a fight waged homogeneously by white Americans about white Americans for the benefit of white Americans who were being criminalized as white Americans. Now let's segue to the next stage. There was this underground civil rights movement going on at the time. It was not a majority movement. It has never, incidentally, been a majority movement. And all of these black people of African descent in America who were the sons and daughters of the sons and daughters of the sons and daughters of slaves, no longer intimidated by risking their lives back home. That the civil rights movement sprang anew. It had adherents among people of goodwill in the so-called white community. And by the way, just let me give you a footnote here. I abhor race classification. I think it's the dumbest thing that's ever happened in the world. I think no good can come of it remaining. I am not a black man, even though I'm classified as one. You are not white folks, even though you're classified as such. If you internalize your race classification, you are a fool, because you have lost sight of the fundamental human dignity which rises above classification of all kind, save perhaps male and female, where there are fundamental differences that cannot be ignored. And so I think race classification is total and complete bullshit. And the sooner we shed it individually, the better off we'll be. That's why in my more lucid moments, I refer to white folks as people classified as white, and as black people, as people classified as black, et cetera, because that shows the ridiculous nature of our refusal to shed this irrelevant skin and see the beauty of the individual inside. But back to the point. So, now we're heading into the 60s. And several things happened during the 60s that need to be remembered. First of all, the 60s had a racist structure intact all over the United States. Law enforcement totally segregated. To become a black cop was to become a pariah. You couldn't get promoted. You weren't considered a full-fledged police officer, but you had to be there to legitimize what was going on in the black community. The black community was being policed essentially by white males. White males who had been trained in the Henry Ford tradition. If you will remember, Henry Ford became an industrialist of great power and presence because he understood race in America. He was the last to unionize, and only the Great Depression caused the Ford Motor Company to unionize. You know how he kept from unionizing? He had a three-part workforce. He pretended to be a liberal, but boy, was he cynical. One-third of the workforce was people who had been here for three or four generations, white folks, so-called. The second part of his workforce were immigrants, people who were struggling to become Americans, who were the victims of prejudice, such as the Irish and the Italians and the Jews. And the third part of his workforce were African Americans from Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, who'd come up to Detroit via the Mississippi River for their first opportunity to work in American industrial jobs. And his approach was very simple. This wasn't humanitarianism because he was a deeply racist man. Anytime they'd be in the paint shop, for example, getting their asses kicked by the same toxic fumes because you get a Ford in any color as long as it was black. And you could hear the conversation. Damn, man, these fumes are fucking me up. And that would be the white guy. And then the immigrant guy said, in a barely discernible English dialogue or dialect, he'd say, yes, these fumes are fucking me up. And then the black man would say, these motherfucking fumes are fucking me up. And so they'd be having the same problem. And they would immediately go to the logical solution to the problem. Let's stop these paint fumes. This is dangerous. We're all working under dangerous conditions. Until Henry Ford's men would sneak on in and say to the white guy, look, I saw you talking to that hunky and that nigger. And he'd fall in line. Then they go to the so-called hunky, the immigrant. Hey, man, I saw you talking to that nigger. What were you talking to that nigger about? We don't talk to niggers here, blah, blah, nigger this, nigger that. And he'd fall in line. And then they'd go to the so-called nigger. And they'd say, nigger, are you crazy? I saw you talking to that white man. Do you want to lose your job? No, sir, boss. And so the show kept rolling. They never could agree on the things they had in common. They were divided on the basis of race and ethnicity. And when I look at the police force that we inherited in the J. Edgar Hoover, who was in his last days when I was growing up in this profession, that's the America I saw. The America where I couldn't go into any neighborhood in Baltimore except a black neighborhood.
William Murphy Esquire at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco, California. His complete talk is available on our Normal Events podcast. Visit norml.org/podcast. Next up today is a little piece of Tommy Chong's talk at the Normal 2006 conference.
But it's really nice being, you know, free again. Jail, you know, wasn't that all that bad. In fact, I want to tell everybody, all that Bubba stuff, you know, that homo stuff, it's not true. It doesn't hurt. but it does hurt when the government is doing it to you. Yeah. Because at least, you know, if it's your Sally, he might kiss you in the ear or something, but the government doesn't do anything like that, you know. And I think what happened to me shows you how scared this government is. You know, I've always, you know, when I do interviews, people ask me about this government because it's so obvious, you know, that they are, you know, not just slightly retarded, but, you know, totally. I mean, when you watch Bush speak, it really is like watching the kid from the special class, you know, trying to talk about physics. The people that are under Bush, mentally, physically, you know, they show you that other side. For instance, they show you about the real dangers of the real dangerous drugs in this country, namely alcohol, for instance. Now, alcohol, when you think about what happened to Dick Cheney's friend, that gives you a good example of alcohol abuse. And I think, I know, because from experience that Dick Cheney's Secret Service guys smoke pot. I know that for a fact. I do know that. And the reason I know that is that I sold them bongs. Yes. Yes. And they pose for a picture. They have me, and they've got the bong in their hand, they're pulled, and they said to me, I didn't ask, but because I knew they were cops, but they said, hey, you know who we are? And I go, no. And he goes, we're Secret Servicemen. And I said, oh, great, you know. Who are you protecting? They go, Dick Cheney. So I know that one of those guys were supposed to be taking care of Dick Cheney the day he shot his friend. So I can imagine what happened. Here's a drunk Dick Cheney with a loaded weapon, right? And the stoned Secret Service guy looking at Cheney thinking, uh-oh. Someone's in trouble here. Then he looked over and he seen Dick's friend, Harry, in the line of fire, and so he yelled to Harry, duck. And Dick Cheney goes, where? At least that's something that could have happened.
That was Tommy Chong at the Normal 2006 conference. You can download his entire talk there from San Francisco with a direct MP3 listening link we have at normalaudiostash.com. Also, one of my favorite interviews so far was conducted just in October. Anne Dryan is the chairwoman of the Normal Advisory Board. Anne is an author and the wife of the late Carl Sagan. Anne is also one of the most outspoken advocates of marijuana law reform. We have a very special Audio Stash interview for you today. Anne Dryan is the chairwoman of the Normal Foundation Board. Anne's writing is known across the world, and her latest work has been editing the spoken essays of her husband, Carl Sagan, into the new book, The Varieties of Scientific Experience. The book is out this week from Penguin Publishers. Anne has been a longtime member of Normal and an outspoken advocate for marijuana law reform. She joins us today from San Francisco, California, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you today to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
It's my pleasure, Chris. I'm really happy to be with you.
It's wonderful to speak with you, Anne. I saw you last on stage at the High Times Stony Awards in New York City. What's it like being out there as the chairwoman of Normal and interacting with this younger generation of marijuana smokers? The hip-hop scene very well represented a few weeks ago in New York City.
I know, and it was funny. I had some trepidation going out there, and I was thinking they were going to think, who is this woman? What is she doing here? But what was so cool was that when I said that I thought that getting high was a human right, I really felt that I connected with everybody, and that, you know, I just felt a tremendous amount of warmth, and people were like, yeah, it is a human right, and it really is a human right, and that's why I'm so proud of my multi-year connection to Normal, and the way that Normal fights for this human right and responsible use. It's just a tremendous honor for me to be part of that.
And tell us how marijuana was introduced to you and what effects it might have had on your life and career.
I started smoking marijuana when I was 15. It was the 60s. And I have to say that I cannot think of a single problem that marijuana has ever caused me except perhaps for misplacing my keys repeatedly. But, you know, apart from that, it has enhanced my life, my family life, my professional life, every aspect of my life. And for me, the fact that it's always been, you know, completely integrated into my life, and yet never in any way has there ever been an issue of, like, that it was addictive. There have been long periods in my life, and there still are, where I just simply don't smoke marijuana. And when I want to, I do. And I really believe that that's a right that everyone should have. I don't understand, especially in the case of medical marijuana, but not only in that case, why in a free country this should still be an issue 10, 20, 30 years later, after its efficacy in taking the worst suffering in cancer and AIDS and other, and glaucoma and other diseases. The fact that it mitigates that suffering, that has been, a case has been made repeatedly, and yet here we are in 2006, it seems insane, still struggling to get that human right to use a plant which we have, as human beings, 10,000 or more years of very positive experience with.
We're speaking with Ann Dryan, the chairwoman of the Normal Foundation Board and editor of Carl Sagan's The Varieties of Scientific Experience. Ann, I've always been struck with the powerful observational ability of you and Carl and how you both take in the world around you. What's been your experience speaking with people about marijuana?
Well, I try to make it very, I'm very upfront about my relationship to Normal. I'm very proud of it. And all I can say is that in the 15 years or so that I've been working for Normal, I have yet to bring that up and receive a negative reaction. I mean, sometimes people are surprised because they see me in a scientific context, and they, you know, they've been so brainwashed to think that, that, you know, only sort of amotivational people who never accomplish anything smoke marijuana. But it, what's so interesting to me is I've never heard anybody really be negative about it, and the vast majority of the time, people are wildly enthusiastic, and they're really, like, they're kind of, you know, surprised, but then they're like, oh, yeah. And that's the thing, is that I feel that this whole country is, there's the use of marijuana is so much more widespread, and it's very much like the Victorians with human sexuality. It's like if you were to listen to the way people spoke in polite conversation in the Victorian period, you would think that no one was having any sex. But of course, that was obviously not the truth. And the same thing is true here, is that people are afraid for their jobs, they're afraid for their reputation there, and so they feel they can't be honest about it. But my experience in other realms, for instance, in the scientific community, is that, you know, there is no lie that that is helpful. In fact, if we, you know, lies are pernicious. Fear and secrecy eat up our souls. And, you know, there are a lot of people who aren't in a position to be as forthright about this as I am. But the more of us who are completely open about it, the more hope we have of getting a sane drug policy in this country. We haven't had one in way too long, and it's long overdue, and I'm 57, and I'm a part of a generation, I think, that doesn't want to die leaving this mess that the states and the federal government have created for us. We really have to clean this up. But the other thing that I find in my travels is that everybody smokes or knows someone who smokes, but very few people join Normal. And I'd like to plead with you that if you've ever had a great experience on marijuana, if you've ever had a fantastic moment of listening to music in a way that took you places you never thought you'd go, or with food, or with family, or sexually, or any of those ways, you please join us. Please help Normal set this right, because it's not right for people middle-class people like myself to sit back and let poor people bear the brunt of this horrible policy and be victimized by this kind of lack of reason and cruelty.
And this has been a wonderful interview today. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, Chris, it was my pleasure. I really hope we meet again.
As do I. Ann Dryan is the chairwoman of the Normal Foundation Board and the editor of Carl Sagan's newly released essays entitled The Varieties of Scientific Experience, A Personal View of the Search for God. We have links to the book at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.